there, Archer. This is Nick in Paris. Hope you're doing well. And I was just catching up on your shows now that I'm back from my weekend away. And I just wanted to say about show number 252 about the Gypsy Kings concert that I loved your description of a multicultural, multi everything really group that was at the concert, you know, gays, straights, old, young, different ethnic backgrounds, etc. It's certainly the sort of country that I would like to live in. I echo your thoughts about the way that America should be. I think that's the sort of country that I would aspire to live in, and not a backward thinking country. Not to say that things in Europe are rosier. Anyway, I'm going to continue catching up on your shows, and I look forward to the history podcast because it seems like it's on the subject of Bastide, so I'm sure the boyfriend can teach me quite a lot about Bastide and remind me a lot about my history, because I learned it a long time ago at university, and as I said in my own podcast, I'm really crap at remembering historical dates and facts and etc. But I look forward to listening to it. Anyway, I'll stop rambling. Take care and speak to you soon. Bye bye.
This is Archer of ArcherRadio.com. Today is Tuesday, July 18th, 2006, and Chef Mark from the Remarkable Palate Podcast and Remarkably Mark is back with us today as co-host. Hi, Mark.
I am your humble servant.
How are you today?
I'm good.
I'm so glad you decided to join us for another show, because there were some...
thank you. There was I've had time to sober up since the last show.
Oh, that's good to hear, because you were drunk on that last show. You know what? I forgot to refill my wine glass, but that's okay. There were some things that we didn't talk about, and I wanted to first mention, because I mentioned it before, that I was going on a photo shoot at my friend Bob's house. Okay. Well, here's the best thing that I think. Well, maybe not the best thing, but on Friday, I drove down to my friend Bob's house on the northern neck of Virginia, and it's about 100 miles from my house. And, of course, I have my new hybrid Honda Civic. And I got 52 miles per gallon.
Wow.
I barely used 2 gallons of gas on that trip.
That's wonderful.
I know.
Now, are there a lot of uphills and downhills on that trip?
No, it's very flat.
Because, you know, in New Mexico, where I grew up, I used to do the trick of just coasting.
Yeah.
I used to coast a lot.
And when you coast, you're charging the battery at the same time.
Really?
Yeah, so it's
really
cool.
Well, I mean, not with a mild car. I would just put it in neutral. And, you know?
Oh, that kind of coasting.
That kind of coasting. Well, because, you know, we would have these, you know, if you've climbed a mountain, then you have this long downhill.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And then, of course, you know, if you feel like you need the traction, then you put it in gear. But
yeah.
That was my way of saving gas when I was a poor high school student with my 1977 Datsun 710.
Oh, my God.
Piece of junk, but it was mine.
I was driving a 76 Vega then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so the photo shoot, this guy, my friend Bob and I had had a photo shoot with him back in the fall, and he was a little chunky then, not definitely not fat, but he had a little bit of weight on him. And this time he has lost about 15 pounds, and my God, you could see a six pack, and of course his dick is huge. So
I noticed that. Well, now, okay, this is the redhead fellow.
Yes, the redhead guy.
And I just clicked onto your blog, and I'm looking at some photos where he's in, like, a barn. Is that the most recent ones, or those are the previous ones?
Those are the most recent ones at Bob's house. He has all that property there.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Yes, he has a lovely schwanzer.
He sure does, yes. And so I shot about 300 photos that day of him, and I'm going to turn them into artwork, but... what I did was, because people who read my blog regularly know that I post in my photography section updates to the men photography, talking about the different models and stuff. So yeah. this past weekend, I spent some time and updated the photo galleries with the last three models that we've worked with. And I think the best one is this last guy. I mean, he is just, oh. And
yeah.
The thing is, he's straight.
Yeah.
He is straight. I couldn't believe it.
You know what I love about photography? Like, for example, I mean, there's one image in this whole set that really stands out, that is really a fine image, and it's the one in the window. You know,
where you see the wood, yeah,
all that distressed wood. And what I mean, there's for several reasons, and I'll tell you. Obviously, just compositionally, it obeys the rule of thirds. You have these interesting vanishing point, you know, like you can feel like just the lines are really going towards this vanishing point, so you get this really interesting perspective. And then just the framing of it in, you know, it's a natural frame. You know, you've got all of this distressed wood, and then in the center, there's this black thing with a human figure in it, you know, and the way he's looking out, you know, you can attach a little bit of a story to it. So
Yeah. That's
for me always what makes photographs of people interesting, is that I want there to be a story in there. And it's almost like it's really interesting, if you tell your subject to think of a secret that no one else knows, you will always get amazing images out of it. And that image I'm thinking of, it's like he has a secret. Like there's something going on there.
Yeah, I have no idea what he was thinking about, but he consistently got that serious look on his face, like he was thinking about something.
Yeah.
So,
but you know what I mean? Like, it's the difference between actually thinking about something and then looking, like having a look on your face. Like, if you tell him have a serious look on your face, it may not read, but if you tell him whatever you told him, it worked, because it looked like he was actually thinking about something and not just posing.
Well, this is how good of a model he is. I never told him anything. I said, just strike a pose, just get in a pose. And he became that way. So, I mean, he's good of a model. So anyway, I want to encourage all the listeners to go to my blog, which is just archer.com/blog.html or whatever.
I actually call it Archer.
Yeah, because there's two R's at the end. I'm sure people who are listening know about it, but there's a whole series of the pictures in the photography section of my blog, so go there. Yes, maybe I'll put a link indeed. In the show notes. I'll have to see.
You should.
Anyway, so that's what I did on Friday, and I worked on that this weekend. But now, also, we did not mention on yesterday's show, on Monday's show, about Big Brother.
Yeah.
Not that we want to dominate a show with Big Brother, but on last Thursday's show, Kacer won Head of Household, but just before he won Head of Household, Allison was kicked out of the house. What did you think about that?
They kicked that bitch to the curb. Thank God it was her, not Danielle. That's all I gotta say.
You were hoping.
I love me some Danielle.
Yeah, she's good. And the vote was 8-2, so she was obviously liked. Uh-huh. You know.
Well, yeah, and she also, you know, she worked it. She did her acts of contrition. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
She really. Turned it around and made people think that she wasn't playing them, you know. And she's like, and you heard it in her diary room confessions, where she said, you know, I can't play it the same way I played it last time. They know what I'm up to,
right?
You know, people have watched me, so they know my thing. And that's what makes these sort of all-star type things harder. I remember that on the Survivor All-Stars too, people already had strong not only opinions and views of people, but they, you know their strategies. You know how they work.
Exactly.
So it's going to be a lot harder for her this time around. I don't know that she's going to be able to make it.
Now, I did watch it on Sunday, but I'm not going to tell you what happened.
So. Yeah, I'll watch it soon. But, I mean, you can give me something that's not critical to the outcome. Was there any drama or dish that happened between the people?
What was very funny, I thought was a good little part of the show, was where Dr. Will told us what kind of doctor he is. He's a dermatologist.
Yeah. Oh, of course, because he's a Hollywood doc. I mean,
exactly. That's
where all the money is. It's that and plastic surgery.
And he was giving Howie a hard time about Howie's wrinkles, and he kept saying, oh, Howie, I could hit you here, 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 and here with Botox and get rid of those wrinkles. And he was just hounding Howie about his wrinkles and how he could use Botox. And he said...
And was Howie defensive, or did he take like a puppy dog, like, yeah, doc? Yeah,
he
doc.
Was kind of being a puppy dog and kind of just like being quiet about it, because you could tell he was thinking, oh my God, do I really look that old? You know, he could see him thinking that in his head.
And every time he plays with his little fake lightsaber, he looks even older.
Oh, he did that too. He pulled out the lightsaber.
Oh, God.
He did that too. But Dr. Will said that he gives himself Botox all the time,
And I'm sure.
And if you look at his forehead, because as soon as he said that, I looked at his forehead, and sure enough, he doesn't have any wrinkles on his forehead.
No, it doesn't move. Yeah.
No, that's right. It doesn't move.
I don't know. I just think the whole Botox look, just it doesn't make people look better. It makes them look non-wrinkled, but it doesn't make them look better.
Yeah, because they can't show emotion.
Right. Your face doesn't have any real character to it.
Exactly. So without giving anything else away, I will leave it at that for with Big Brother. But did you want to mention anything about Thursday's show?
Just
that you were glad that Allison's gone.
I was glad that it was out. I mean, not that I had anything against Allison because I didn't watch that season that she was on, but just glad that it wasn't Danielle. But I was interesting to see that Kacer won head of household because it's that whole Big Brother 6 thing.
Oh yeah, and did you notice how as soon as he won, Howie and Janelle were jumping all over him, like totally revealing their
And I'm sure
alliance.
He was just like, "You guys, stop it."
Exactly.
Stop it. Don't give it away.
It's obvious the three of them are totally in cahoots together, that they're going
to
be
there. At least James is trying a little bit harder to not sort of show that, not betray that.
And I love James. He is such a hottie.
You're terrible. Do you know this? This reminds me of a joke that my friend Jaffe used to do. Do you know Jaffe Cohen? Have you heard of him?
No, I can't say.
He's one of the funny gay males, which in the 90s was this real groundbreaking comedy. It was three comedians, and they were called the funny gay males.
Oh, my God, I never heard of it.
Bob Smith and Danny McWilliams and Jaffe Cohen. And Jaffe is a friend of mine, and I actually met them because they were playing Provincetown that summer. So his real name is Mark, but he goes by Jaffe as his stage name. I'm more Jewish. He and I became friends that summer. So anyway, he has this bit in his act where it's like, you're sitting there, you're watching TV, and you're like, "Oh my God, that guy's cute." And then, the other person goes, "Oh my God, how could you say that? He just murdered his entire family." He pauses and he says, "Well, did he have a good reason?" It's like, you will forgive anything if someone is hot.
He's cute, that's right. Does he have a job? No, but he's cute.
No, but he's cute, so who cares?
Oh, too funny. Well, let's get serious for a minute.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about this. This whole Middle East thing.
Oh, yes, about the war between...
Is that what you wanted to talk about?
Yes, I'm calling it a war between Israel and Lebanon. I mean...
I call it the land of the toothless and the eyeless.
Why do you call it that?
Well, because it's, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
Oh, yes.
Everyone will be blind and toothless.
That's exactly how it seems to be going, because as you may or may not know, and same for the listeners, this all started with the abduction of three Israeli... army men, or whatever you call them.
Some soldiers.
Three Israeli soldiers, and by Hezbollah, and Israel wants them back, and because of that, they are retaliating against Hezbollah. But the problem with this
is... They're not retaliating against Hezbollah. They're killing civilians.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
They're murdering people.
The problem with this is that Israel is not targeting Hezbollah alone. They are targeting the entire country of Lebanon.
No, they bombed Tyre, the Lebanese city of Tyre. They just bombed it.
Yes.
16 people are dead, including 5 Lebanese Canadians. I want the Canadian government to jump up and say, "Excuse me, you don't kill Canadians."
Exactly. And I think that Israel's response to this is a little too much. They are going overboard with this. They need to stop.
Yeah, well, for many reasons, but chief among which is just a tactical reason.
Right, you're killing innocent people.
But I mean in terms of tactical from a military point of view and tactical from a political point of view. See, Israel sees themselves as the underdogs, as the poor put upon that everyone in the region wants to kill, and therefore the minority. But
hello.
To the mouse.
We
missed
that.
Of
we
Lebanon.
Missed. We missed that. Can you say that again?
Because they have. I'm saying Israel is like the cat to Lebanon's mouse in this instance, because militarily and hardware-wise, they are much more powerful because they're supported by the U.S. I mean, they're very, they're very well-stocked. So they have the ability to really mess people up.
You're talking about Israel?
Israel, yes.
Yes.
They have the ability, and they have, in fact, done that. I mean, the fact that they're just bombing towns in Lebanon, and killing with rockets and killing civilians
just shows that, you know, they're trying to quote unquote send a message, but the only message that's going to send is, you know, eye for an eye, and we're going to keep killing more of you, and we're going to keep doing terrorism there, therefore.
Well, the problem too, I mean, there's another problem too, that Hezbollah is not really, Lebanon does not Hezbollah is not really representing Lebanon as a country.
Right.
It's a faction in Lebanon that's doing this. But Hezbollah also says that they have missiles that can reach into, like, 80 miles into Israel.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean...
Well, but see, that's similar to, like, Al-Qaeda. You know, Al-Qaeda has operations in all these countries, and they have sympathizers in all these countries, but they don't, you know, they don't represent any government.
Well, that's true.
So it's like for us, and it's the same bad rationale that we use to go into Iraq, saying,
exactly.
Oh, well, they, you know, Al-Qaeda has people in Iraq, so therefore it gives us the right to attack Iraq. Well, by that reasoning, it gives us the right to attack the U.S., because there's Al-Qaeda operatives here.
Exactly.
But... No one. I mean, it's like we're not going to drop a bomb on Alexandria, Virginia.
Right.
But I'm willing to bet you that there are Al-Qaeda there.
Oh, I'm sure. There's Al-Qaeda everywhere.
So that's my point. Is it so to say, therefore, that, oh, because people operate in this place that are against us, then it gives us the right to bomb these areas where innocent civilians are living. And, you know, it's just disgusting.
It doesn't
make any sense, because what can you achieve from it?
Nothing.
Do you kill the people that are doing it? No.
No. They're not going to be able to do anything against Hezbollah, because Lebanon will not come down against Hezbollah, because there's 14 members of the Hezbollah group in the Lebanon government. You know, they've got 14 seats in the parliament or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing, too, is Hezbollah is also getting funding from places like Iran.
Yeah.
Is your phone ringing?
Yeah, that's okay. I just silenced it.
Okay. So the thing is, Iran's going to be dragged into this, too, because they're funding and giving missiles to Hezbollah.
Right.
To
so
do
now
this.
You've got two nuclear powers involved
right.
in a potential conflict that could escalate into a grand-scale war. I mean, this is, you know... I don't know the number of actual wars, but there's at least four, right, that have been actually called wars since the creation of the State of Israel.
Oh, yes, yes.
There's no reason why this won't actually become a real war at this
point. I think it will be. I really do think it will be.
And if Iran is dragged in, then can God help us all?
Well, I was going to say, and who's been pretty silent about not coming down against Israel on this? Yes, our beloved President Bushy.
Yeah.
He has not been able to commit to saying, "Israel, stop."
Well, of course not, because then people will turn around and say, "Well, what about you? You're doing the same thing." He knows he's doing the same thing on a much grander scale.
Right. So he can't be the one to say you're wrong.
Right. I love how, on an unrelated but sort of similar note, I just love how Putin put him in his place.
Oh my God, I heard that too. I love that.
He said, "We do not want democracy like you're bringing to Iraq here."
Right, because
which I love. It's like, who are you to come into Russia and say what kind of democracy we should have?
When exactly.
You're quote unquote bringing democracy to Iraq. Like, that's supposed to be some great example of democracy.
Yeah, and he said, I think he said something like, "We don't want the same kind of democracy here." Or something like that.
Yeah, and that was a very diplomatic way.
It was, and it was a direct response to Bush for saying, "Look at the democracy in Iraq." You know, like that's a shining example.
Like,
well, hello, it's not a shining example.
Oh my God! Yeah, I mean, I that surprised me even for him that he would say that. You know, that he would walk into that trap so easily.
I know, but I was cheering for Putin when I heard that. I'm like, "You go, Mister," because you are
unfortunately.
Exactly right.
I mean, yeah. Well, the thing that bugs me about it is that the sad thing is that some of what the administration is saying is true, that some of the progress that was made in the 90s is slowly being rolled back, and that Putin's regime is a little bit more of a crackdown type regime. And but again, it's like, who are we? You know, we're the pot calling the kettle black.
Exactly.
Like, at this point in time, we are in no position to tell anyone how to run a democracy.
I was going to say the same thing, because the people in... whatever it's Russia or whatever it's being called. What's it being called now? Is it just Russia?
Russian Federation.
Russian Federation. They are actually, I think the majority of people who live in Russia wouldn't mind it being rolled back a little bit, because they're not seeing the successes of a democratic government as the capitalist part of it that we have in the United States. So they wouldn't mind going back a little bit and having some more state support for certain things.
Yeah, see, the danger with that is that, see, you end up with that you're living in this really mixed up system. And unfortunately, anytime there's a transition like that, there are inevitably going to be a few years where it's really dicey, because what steps into the gap, unfortunately, is crime and corruption.
And
you need to ferret it out. And you can't, like, it reminds me of, you know, the Israelites wandering through the desert for those 40 years saying, wait, we had it better in Egypt. Let's go back. And then they had that little mini revolt, you know, and they started worshiping the calf and all that. And
yeah.
They were like, this desert sucks, man. Get me out. This ain't no promised land. Get me out of this desert. It was better back in Egypt when we were slaves. You know, and it's like you have to get over that period, that tough period, and then, you know, get to your promised land. And I think that especially in an instance where you've got, you know, it was the world's most powerful communist country that ruled militarily. You know, they had the strongest military in the world. Then for that to be like nearly just dissolved and then turned into this free-for-all cowboy democracy, naturally there's going to be a big influence of corruption and of crime in there, and it is going to be tempting to say, well, let's go back, but I think they need to be strong, but they need to move it forward. And certainly it's not like we're not the great example right now of democracy.
No, we're not. You
know? So
at the same time, though, I think that Bush knows that he cannot.
Now, if the president of New Zealand said it, that would mean something.
Well, that's a little different, yeah. But I was going to say, Bush. I think Bush realizes that he can't say anything to Putin about. I mean, you know, we can go into Iraq and change their country, but there's no way we could go into Russia and change their country. You know, into a capitalist democracy that we have here in the United States. Yeah. Bush knows that, so he has to step lightly about the way he says things.
Well, I mean, just historically, and I'm sure the boyfriend would be able to speak to this more fluently, but no one ever in the history of mankind has been able to go into Russia and make them change. It's all change that's happened in Russia has always happened internally.
Oh.
Look, Napoleon is a great example.
Yes, that's true. Well, now, actually, let's just change topics just slightly, but stick on history. I can't remember. Did you listen to the history podcast on Friday?
Yes, I did.
Remember, we
talked about how I just loved how all the answers were false.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
But
we talked about that on your show.
On my show, yeah.
That's
so
right.
Go listen to Remarkably Mark number 10, starring Archer and Steva.
But I can't remember. Did you get them all right?
I did, yeah.
Oh, because you're so smart. But anyway,
I mean, yeah, I just, those happen to be topics that I was particularly interested in. You know, I love the French Revolution, and I love the, I know a little bit about the Russian Revolution, not as much, you know.
But now, there were several comments left on that show, my show, suggesting new things for the boyfriend to talk about in his next history podcast segment.
Yes.
Do you have a suggestion about what he should talk about?
At one point, you know, when you first brought this up, I said, you know, I love reading like Howard Zinn and that kind of stuff.
Oh,
where
that's
it's sort
right.
of like, it's kind of like a not revisionist per se, but it's looking at historical events and the analysis of those events from a different perspective. You know, history has always been written by the people who won. And to look at the same events through a different lens would be quite interesting, and I think that the boyfriend is he's very astute in that way, and I would love to hear his perspective on some of these events, you know, as told by the other side. You know,
well, you know, he does a really pretty good job about representing, you know, all sides of an issue, you know.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, from a historiographical. Is that even a word? From the historiographer's point of view, you know, historiography is all about how does history become history,
right?
You know, and who writes the history and all that, and how does it get written? I just love the notion of going back to certain things and really revisiting it from the perspective of the other side or of other people. And I don't mean necessarily like being fair. I mean like literally go back and look at it through the other people's point of view.
Okay, so let me ask you.
We tend to have a pretty chauvinistic, almost jingoistic view of the American Revolution. And
oh,
I would
yes.
love to see it written from the other side.
Well, then let's look at this way, because, you know, there was a little debate there for a while going on about Bush being declared in 50 years the worst president in our history.
Yeah.
But yet I have heard plenty of Republicans and read it on blogs saying that he will actually be the best president in our history.
Yeah.
Can you imagine going back, let's say, in 20 years and thinking about the Bush presidency and actually agreeing that maybe he did have the best presidency? I mean, looking at it now...
Well, at this moment, no. Of course, there's no way that I could, because more than any president in my lifetime, I've had the most problems with.
Exactly, same here.
But it is obviously conceivable for me to think that my view of his presidency will change over the years, as it always does. I mean, I think even Ronald Reagan, a lot of people's view of his presidency has shifted.
Well, for me, with Ronald Reagan, certain issues have changed. My opinion has changed on certain issues that he had in his presidency. But overall, I still don't think he had the best presidency in the, you know.
Well, I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying the fact is that people's views of him have changed.
And yes.
It's only been a few years.
Right.
So therefore, it's not out of the realm of possibility that people that our views of the Bush presidency will change drastically. The big problem with that is that I think that people, if you're doing that, I think that way of looking at things is dependent on outcomes rather than essential principles. And for me, like the way I could see that people in 20, 30, 50 years would say that Bush's presidency was good is if it turns out that things, you know, the world order is changed in such a way that it's sort of to our benefit, and then we have his policies to
base
it
on. Yeah.
But for me, it's more about the essentials. It's never about the outcomes that you achieve. It's about what you do in trying to achieve them. And you have to stick by a certain set of principles. And for me, what we're doing in just our foreign policy right now under this administration, just at its base principle, is wrong.
I completely agree.
It's this sort of, you know, this cowboy manifest destiny. You know, it is God has appointed us as the arbiters of that which is good.
And we must create world democracy.
Right. And anytime anyone in history has had that view, history has judged them as being
megalomaniacs.
Wrong, on the wrong side. I mean, we love talking about Hitler this and Hitler that and how evil and awful they were, but if you look at the actions that this administration is taking, it's very similar to some of the actions that went on during the creation of the Third Reich.
At the very beginning.
Homeland Security Agency and the
wiretapping and
all of that stuff is very similar to, like, Nuremberg laws.
Yes.
You know, like, oh, let's enact new laws that target certain kinds of people because we see them as our enemies.
Right.
And that's, you know, if you make that connection, people are like, oh no, that's ridiculous. That's not at all the
case. Yeah, but you know what? They thought it was ridiculous back in 1936, 37, 38.
Well, what I'm saying is they may not have. The fact that it happened means that a majority of people didn't think it was ridiculous.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You see,
yeah.
And they allowed it to happen. And then, of course, the result was much more ominous.
Well, so are we allowing it to happen here in the United States then?
Well, I think we are. I mean, I think, you know, it's the old, it's anytime someone says, well, it's okay to do the wiretap because our enemies are getting clever, or it's all right to search people this or that because you never know, you know, it's fear. You know, you inculcate fear in people, and then they'll give away their liberties. You don't have to take them away.
You're right.
They will just hand them right over.
Because of the fear.
Right. And that's what happened during the Weimar, you know, right after the Weimar regime in Germany. You know, people were broke. They were fearful. They were looking for someone to blame, and they found it.
Well, to bring this back to where we started, if you don't mind me doing that, we started with the war in the Middle East. Now, I just have, because we need to end this because it's running a little long, but I would just want to bring back one question for you. If Iran is dragged into this war because of their connection to Hezbollah with missiles and so forth, do you think we're at the very beginnings of World War III?
I wouldn't dare to say that, and I would hope to God it wouldn't happen. I think that way of looking at war is just, we have to shift that way of thinking, because, as you know, I mean, just the way wars are fought are so different now.
Well, and I also too.
In that sense, no, I would say no, and I hope to God no.
I would agree because war these days is more regional. It's not worldwide. You know, we don't have the current wars are not like two sides fighting. It's a lot of little different regional areas that are fighting.
Yeah, and they're also ideological wars.
Right, right.
More than, I mean, certainly more than sort of real old historical wars where it's just about plain old territory. I mean, you know, they claim that it's about territory, and I guess at base, the whole Middle East conflict is about, you know, who gets to control a little piece of land that they think is holy.
And but it's always been that way for 200
right, but ultimately
years.
It's less about that land as it is about now that there's been so much offense on both sides that really it's about that each side really thinks the other side doesn't deserve to exist.
Exactly.
And of course, the ridiculousness of both of those stances is that, well, you know, it's anti-reality. The reality is, yeah, those people do exist, and you got to deal with it.
Exactly.
You know, whether you like them or not, or whether they killed your aunt or your grandma or your cousin's cousin's cousin got killed 12 years ago and you retaliated, they retaliated, and this whole, you know, back and forth thing, ultimately, it's just like neither of those sides wants to just say, you know what, they do have the right to exist, and they do have the right to be happy and live their lives. Yeah. And we have to find some way of letting that happen and them letting us do it, too.
And living with it, yeah.
Right, but I don't think anyone wants to do that at this point.
You know? I agree. Well, this was an excellent discussion. I want to thank you again for being my
co-host. And I'm
going to
get down off my soapbox. Now. Yeah.
Your feet must be really clean. Well, listen, thank you so much for being my co-host today.
Thank you.
So, boys and girls, thank you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. Thanks for all the messages. And until next time.
And all
boys,
the massages.
I didn't say massages, did I?
No, I did.
Oh, I would love a massage. Oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be nice?
If there's anybody in the D.C. area who wants to give me a free massage, send me a message.
And then come up to New York.
Because the boyfriend's out of town and I could use a massage. All right. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye, boys and girls. I should raise